show studio. This is your Ghost Bennett Demon Hunter show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Hey, welcome back! Welcome back, Shadow Nation! To the one, the only, mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Demon Hunter!
Yes, sir, I'm over here.
I see you. You sound like you're in a box. Are you away from your microphone?
Yes, you are.
Would I ever step away from my microphone?
Yes. We stepped away last week.
That was Shark Week, dude.
It was. Oh, my God.
Shark Week.
It's still going on. It's like Shark Month, you know? I said at the end of that. Anyway, guys, welcome back. It is Sunday night. It smells like Sunday night. That's because it is. Special thanks to all our homes. 102.7 FM, The Hog, Planet Paranormal, Stitcher, Smart Radio, and the new Action Audio Apps, guys. Are you listening? They want to know. Check them out. ActionAudioApps.net. Huh? Yes, you know it, buddy. We are there. We are here. We are everywhere. And of course, YouTube and Ustream and all the great places that allow us to have this little funky thing we call the G&D show. Huh?
I am very impressed, sir. Very, very impressed.
Hey, I tell you, I went to the, you know, it's getting that time. That great time of year. It's August. It's staying about 70, 72, 75 here in Indianapolis. I think I got up to 83 or 84 this week. But it's very, you know, very attractive weather to be here in this state. And the thing about seasons changing, Demon Hunter, and you are in love with this as much as I, not that October and the fall of the year is upon us, but the beers.
Oh, yes, the beers. I went to the Renaissance Fair the other day, and it was my first taste of San Adam's Oktoberfest for this year.
Oh, wow. What were they charging, like $7 a quart of it? Or what do you call it in the old days? Stein of frothy ale. get me a frosty ale, wench.
Considering they sell it in plastic cups, I think it's just by the cup.
Was it Larry the Cable Guy? They went to medieval times, and she said... He said, can I get a fork? She said, we don't have any forks. He said, but they had Pepsi in medieval times, but no forks.
Yes.
Yeah, that was classic. Epic. Epic.
Epic. Epic.
Epic. But we are back, guys. So good to be here. Sorry about last week. It was Shark Week. And as my co-worker, my co-host, my...
Brother from another mother. That guy from the other side of town who thinks exactly the same way I do, except the exact opposite.
The exact opposite. My adversary for the last 8 years. What was I saying?
The thorn in my side.
Yeah, he put it so well, guys. In honor of Shark Week, we were off. But I was just explaining, it's been like Shark Month. And now I think the Travel Channel or somebody else does something called Shark Day or something. They, you know, the follow-ups, the spin-offs. And we know how Hollywood loves to spin off of the exact same thing, which makes no sense.
Well, you can tell they're a little behind because, I mean, we've had Walking Dead. We've had, you know, all the different apocalypse movies out all last year. They were sure they were still going to be going strong right now. So this year we had zombie sharks. Mm-hmm. We had Sharktopolis.
Sharktopolis.
Although I have to say, they opened up Shark Week this year.
Sharktopolis.
Sharkopolis.
Like apocalypse.
Sharkopolis. I don't know.
Hollywood,
I can't get the word out.
So the B film industry is just going nuts right now.
Yes.
Sharknado.
Well, the sad thing is, last Shark year, Storm. Those of you who are Shark Week fans, like booty. my co-host and I are,
yeah.
Will remember that last week they opened up Shark Week with a movie called Megalodon.
Oh.
And they did a documentary style of them out hunting a megalodon.
Yeah.
And then at the end, in 2/10 of a second, they flashed on the screen that none of this was real and it was all made up. And
right.
It was all fake and everybody got ticked.
That's how it is every time. Every year they do that.
Yeah. Well, this year they started off with something called Shark of Darkness.
Yeah.
And It was based on an actual legend of a shark.
Shark Darknado.
Well, down in South Africa, there's a legend of a shark called Submarine.
Oh.
But they took real stories and kind of blended them in with the story of Submarine and did a documentary style of they were hunting Submarine, which I would rather have them just gone out and hunted Submarine and failed than to fake the whole thing. You know, it's
Hollywood, man. You got to do something more bang for your buck. You know what I'm saying?
It's more than a buck to pay for cable, and I would like to get what I was promised.
You know, we know how tight butt Hollywood is because we've been there, and they you have to fight with them to get airline tickets to go out and film sometimes, unless you're signed a contract right away. But
yeah, they'll drop $10,000 and book flights, and then the next day say, "Oh, we're going to change your flight tomorrow," but then you can't get an extra $200 to get dinner.
Right, exactly. $20. What are you talking about? But I guess
for everybody on site.
Yeah. Well, they got to be loving it right now, Demon Hunter, because as sharks, as the stars on Discovery, I mean, they don't have to pay them nothing. Do they get a per diem? I mean, you know, the shark's the star.
They get three fish heads a day.
See? And they're probably negotiating that.
yeah, that's true.
What about a tuna? That's one tuna a week. That's it. That's the most we can do. Sign here. No royalties.
Have you seen what people are getting for tuna, man? They get $20,000 a tuna now.
That's true. $20,000. Demon Hunter, without further ado. Shadow Nation. Let's do this thing.
Sure.
Yeah. Tonight's guest, Mr. Thomas L. Freeze. You can check him out at thomaslfreeze.com. He's the author of 5 books. He's a graduate of the University of New Mexico and the University of Louisville, out my way. He's the author of Shaker Ghost Stories from Pleasant Hill, Kentucky, The Fog Swirler, and 11 other ghost stories. That's the name of the title. He's got 11 other stories. He didn't title them. You have to buy the book, Fog Swirler. And Strange and Wonderful Things, and many, many more books, guys, that he will bring up tonight. Also, a children's book I thought was really cool, Halloween Sleepwalker, because I've always wanted to write one myself. Even.
Have you now?
A kid's book. Maybe not a pop-up book, because I could be, you know, it could go the wrong way.
Get arrested.
Yeah, it could go the wrong way. It's terrible. But tonight's guest, guys, Thomas Freeze, steps by the house. He's going to tell us about these hauntings out here in the Midwest. And what creeps in the shadows tonight on your Mystifying Oracle Radio, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thomas Freeze, what a great guy, man. What a great guy.
Anybody who's willing to come on our show, great guy.
Great guy. See, I got that out in the first 8 minutes, Demon Hunter. You know how
really?
We said? Yeah, we said we're going to be on schedule. So I wanted to get that.
How many minutes are we into it, man? Because I forgot to start the clock.
We are 8 minutes exact. 7:08 p.m. Eastern Time. Day's August 17th of the year of our Lord, 2014.
Of course, if you folks are listening to us on a rebroadcast on 102.7 The Hog, the time and the date is whatever time and date your car radio says right now. It's
Hey, what's up with these? You brought up these Renaissance fairs, right? Or they call them Renaissance festivals.
It depends on which one you go to.
Now, didn't you tell me, and I don't know if I can say this on the air, but aren't there things that happen with the actors behind the scene at the overnight?
Not necessarily the actors.
Okay.
But there are those of us who have been going to the Renaissance fairs for many, many years and are, how shall I say?
Sexual. Sexual predators.
Hey, I don't want the FBI predator showing could up at my house. We know each other very well because we see each other all the time. And it's not really, even though you might be working there, it's not really a work experience. It's more of a holiday weekend. And sometimes things happen between these folks.
Do you guys use, like, do they break character? I always wonder this about the Civil War people, because you know they have sex and stuff. Can we say sex now on the air? I don't know.
I think you can say sex. Intercourse. I think sex is okay.
Yeah, they have relations out there. You know they do. And, you know, we've been to some of those Gettysburg things. We haven't dressed up and stuff. But, you know, they walk around and they don't break character and they talk to ye old people. No, that's the Renaissance talk. But, you know, the Civil War guys, you know they're doing it in these tents because they're getting excited. They live for this stuff. So, you know, at night when they're sitting around there cooking beans and they got their fake guns and stuff, they're pounding, you know. So the thing about it is, at these Renaissance fairs, do you guys use the terminology like, oh, ye.
You guys.
Not you. Not anymore. I can't say that. Nathan has never been involved in anything like that, especially if he's watching.
Never, never. I would... Okay, in my youth, I will say that the Renaissance festivals, the SCA events, that's the Society of Creative Anachronisms, that sort of stuff, those are all very sexually powered places.
Oh.
Says the Irishman. Hey, you know why the Irish wear kilts, right?
No, why?
Because the sheep can hear zippers.
Oh, the Scottish wear.
No, the Scots wear kilts because the Irish can hear zippers too.
Well, whatever. Oh. Apparently, that my stuff is going to play repeat it tonight. So we're back to that again.
Lovely, sir. Lovely.
Yeah. So every time, watch this. I'll play it. See? Look, it won't stop. Sabrina,
shout out
the
Celtic Tavern in the chat room listening to us tonight.
What's up, Celtic Tavern? Well, we don't get a lot of live people unless we have Mike Rooker.
Cleric Tavern. Dude, have you noticed I need new glasses. Face. Have you noticed this about me?
Yeah, your eyes are going.
My eyes are going. I'm getting old.
Mm-hmm. Your eyes are going. Things aren't as... You know,
the other day, I swore there was a line of ghosts running through my front yard. Turns out the KKK was just in town. But,
Oh, no. I can't believe you said that. It's terrible. Oh, yeah. Special thanks to Midnight Syndicate, Demon Hunter. We've been neglected.
Let's not compare Midnight Syndicate to that joke, okay?
I'm not. Hey, I was looking up today. Didn't you say you went to a fair or a carny or something like that?
I went to a carnival today because, as you know, I was a carny in my youth.
Yeah.
And
you say you were like the Joe Dirt.
I was the Joe. Well, no, I didn't. I wasn't the cleanup guy around. I worked games.
Right. Joe Dirt did too. He did the ring toss and.
Right.
He put that greasy stuff on the ring. Yeah. Remember?
But I can't resist a carnival. I really can't. Mm-hmm. I drive past them. I got to stop. But we have one up here in Connecticut called the Bridgewater Fair.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of my childhood going to the Sussex County Farm and Horse Show.
Oh.
Which was, now it's a state fair, but back in my youth, it was just this little corner fair that would go on every year. But this reminds me a lot of that time because it's just, you know, the 4-H kids showing their animals off. They're doing sheepdog demonstrations.
Sheepdog. What's a sheepdog exactly?
A sheepdog is a dog trained, usually a border collie, trained to herd sheep.
So like Lassie.
Yeah, but Lassie was not a border collie. So she was a herding dog.
Yeah.
And actually he was a herding dog because they used a male dog for Lassie.
But aren't those called collies?
Well, border collies and collies are different things.
Yeah. Wow.
Border collies are kind of like on the border of Ireland and Scotland. That's where they were bred, and they were bred specifically to breed sheep. Or breed sheep, to herd sheep. they didn't breed dogs in order to breed sheep. That didn't happen.
That's amazing.
Easy, man.
Well, I'm
easy.
Just saying, it's amazing.
It's too much coffee.
What happened? No coffee tonight. Special thanks to Samuel Adams, Oktoberfest. And yes, I do drink on the show. Thank you.
I never do. It's horrible. It's bad.
That's flipping me out, man. I can't explain you how...
Hey, folks, I do realize that we can never get any of the, like, 10,000 or so listeners to even send us an email and say hi, join our Facebook or anything like that.
Yeah.
But if you want to see us make a mess of television the way we've made a mess of radio, contact your local broadcast or your favorite broadcasting station. Tell them, let's just go with the Travel Channel. Go with the Travel Channel and say, we want to see the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter on the Travel Channel.
Won't you guys do that tonight while you're still fresh in your memory? Hey, Demon Hunter, special thanks, special thanks to Sandy Merritt. And what was her friend's name? I forget.
Sandy Merritt? Oh.
3-day race for the cure, Sandy Merritt. Race for
the cure, yes.
You don't. I'm so sorry.
I don't have that in front of me. You threw that one on me, man.
Today they completed. Congratulations to you, ladies. They completed the 3-day, 60-mile race for the cure.
Muy impresante.
They completed it, Demon Hunter. I'm so proud of those girls. And not only did they complete it, okay, but they put us, you ready?
Uh-huh.
They put us on top of their, on the back of their t-shirts. Yes.
Now I am very, 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 very happy.
Exactly. This is for you, girl.
Sean, I got to throw this out there. Let's finish saying thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
Because they really deserve our thanks.
That's right.
The fact that they are even out there doing this is wonderful.
That's right.
But I would like to point out.
60 miles.
Are you tired of seeing these people dumping ice water over themselves on Facebook?
Oh my God, I'm glad you brought that up. I haven't looked into the cause. So I don't want to say nothing. Shadow Nation, I don't want to offend anybody, but yes I am. Long story short, it's like, wow.
You know, I donate to a lot of different groups, everything from that. I can't tell you how many. I donate to Audubon Society. I donate to Natural World. I donate to all these places for that. I worked for years with ALS patients and with autism patients and with all. So I donate to them because, you know, I have a connection with them.
Right, right.
But this whole ice dumping thing has gotten closer and closer and closer to me because I've seen more and more of my friends actually doing it.
Yeah.
And each time I click on to like one of the sites with one of my friends doing it, and I'm like, oh God.
Yeah, in the new Facebook, you're gagged to watch it. You have to, you know? It's on there. I mean, you don't have to get the sound, but you're seeing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's I respect that they're out there trying to help everybody.
Yes.
And do something good for everybody. But at the same time, enough already.
It's a good cause, though.
It's a good cause, and I appreciate it. You really want to impress me? Don't do it in the middle of the summer. Stand out in your bathing suit in the middle of winter and dump in a bucket of ice water over with you. I'll be a little more impressed.
So what's the background on this? Is somebody donating money every time this happens or what?
Oh, Sean, let's come back to this in just a second.
Yes.
Because it seems that it's that time of the evening when we have to take a quick break to say thanks to those folks over at 102.7 The Hog. And let them play those wonderful commercials that everybody's been waiting for all night long.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio. It is Sunday night, and we're right in the middle of talking about the ALS Bucket Challenge, ALS?
The ALS Ice Water Challenge.
Right.
I've seen Weird Al Yankovic do it now, and like I said, it's a good cause.
It is.
I appreciate that. I really do. Don't make fun of the way I say appreciate.
You can't say that. You do. We just got banned off of Stitcher or The Hog or something. Action.
What's wrong with saying appreciate?
I don't know. It's got that.
Hey.
It's got that sound to it, you know. No, you know, we're going to get hate mail for this, Demon Hunter.
We are,
it's
and
not
I'm ready for the hate mail,
it's not
and I applaud everyone who's out there building up for this, but somebody came up with the idea, and it was a great idea.
Right, absolutely.
It really was, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew, and I'm waiting for someone to come up with something new.
Yeah.
You know, each time they just do it bigger and bigger, you know, oh, I'm going to do it with 2 ice buckets, or I'm going to do it from, they're going to dump it on me from 3 stories up, or they're going to, you know, I'm going to stand in ice water while they dump ice water over me and blah, blah, blah.
I'm ready for...
I appreciate it. Hey, folks, if you want to send the money out, I've already sent out my check, okay?
He appreciates it, folks.
I appreciate it.
I'm ready for 6.
I've already sent out my check, okay? It's already out there. Don't worry about that. You don't have to include me. I've already sent out the check.
I'm going to include you this week, and I'm going to call you out.
Yeah, well, then I've already done it, dude. Sorry. You're going to be doing it for nothing.
That's what's going to happen tonight. They're going to call us.
Punch you in the mouth.
I did the bucket.
At this point, if somebody actually called my name out on it, I'd just like type on their Facebook, no.
Yeah.
Done.
I'm going to up the game. I'm going to say throw horse urine on you. Huh? Warm, stinky, hot, fresh horse manure and urine. What do you think?
Strap a chunk of bait to your back and swim through a great white infested...
I can't believe you brought up this. We're so politically correct on this show, and you brought this up. These people were you know, doing this.
No, I'm saying I respect it, and I like it. I'm just tired of it.
How do we know the bucket's not heated? Huh?
We're not. I've even seen little kids do it, and like the little kid didn't even flinch, and the mother's like, "Oh, what about the ice?" He's like, "Oh, there it is." You know, it's like I think that one might have been a little fixed. I don't know.
I want to see one.
I don't think they put quite as much ice in that one.
I want to see one get done where they actually go into shock because, you know, when they say when you're real hot, you go into that, you know, you get hit with cold ice water, bam, shock.
Now here's the question.
Then we'll have to do a charity for the guys that went into shock from the bucket of water.
Here's the question I have for you, Sean.
Yeah.
If you don't have the $100,
right?
Because honestly, I make my donations, but I don't have $100 to send out.
Okay.
You and I do this show for free. It's we both have bills like crazy. This show absorbs everything we have.
Yeah.
That's left over. But
we have to pay for this, guys. We have
don't
to pay.
$100. Can you go out and have a bucket dumped over you, and call out other people instead of sending the check?
I could. I mean, if I wanted to do
but
that.
No, is that what can you? Is that acceptable? Instead of sending a check, I'm just gonna. You can dump the water over me instead.
No. I'm not saying anything. I love the Shadow Nation, and anybody that's putting buckets of ice, I'm going to be the one's political correct this time, Demon Hunter, because a long time ago, I stopped drinking heavily on the air, and I've learned to, you know, rechannel my energy.
And I'm proud of you, sir, I am, but we're not done with this conversation.
We're not done, but, you know, no, you're right.
No, this is what I'm saying. If you don't have $100,
yeah,
and somebody calls you out, instead of sending the check in, since you don't have the money,
right?
Can you go out in your front lawn and call somebody else out and have the bucket dumped over you?
I don't know. I don't
is
know the
that,
rules.
Is that a fair exchange?
I don't know the rules.
I don't know the rules either. Nobody's telling you the rules in this pattern of things that's happening.
I gotta say,
somebody who's a ghost man and
somebody call out Demon Hunter to
yes.
do it.
Punch you in the mouth.
Yes. Somebody who is a ghost man and Demon Hunter listener, please post the rules of this whole pattern that's going on right now, because I really need to know what the rules are, because at this point I've sent out all my donations for the year. I have no extra money. And I've got to keep the show going.
All right.
We both do, but I just don't know, man. I don't know.
It's funny. The show is pieced together. You like pick up the bills on certain aspects of it. I pick up the bills on certain aspects of it, and together it just comes in, you know?
Yeah, and this week I've promised some people I am, Sean, going to go out and get a new computer.
Okay.
To put I've been talking about it for months now, but unfortunately I just couldn't afford what we need for the show.
Yeah, they're expensive.
You need something that can host and take phone calls and transfer everything. We've got to get the right kind of computer to do this, and so it's just going to take me a couple more weeks to get that together. But it is coming. It's just a matter of, again, saving the money. And if I got to send out a $100 check, then I'm doomed.
Okay, so we talked about ALS challenge. Which, guys, if you want to do it, we support you. At least you're doing something, you know. But
I want something new. Like I said, I want
something new. Let's change it up a little bit, you know. Yeah. If you want to get more people doing stuff for charity, we got to change it up weekly, if not, you know, every 2 weeks or whatever.
But can I throw one last thing about this in there, Sean?
Yeah, if you wish.
You're like, oh God, the hate mail is just going to pour in. We're not saying we hate this. We're not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's getting a little boring and I'd like to see something new. And I've already sent the check out. That's all I'm saying. But I'm also saying, why is
dangerous waters, my friend.
Why is it that when I first saw this, people were calling maybe 2-3 people out to do it? But I watched one the other night.
Yeah.
Where the guy literally, one bucket of water,
yeah,
called out about 40 people. Yeah, does that seem fair to you? I think you should have a ice bucket for each person you're calling out dumped over you at least.
Do you feel left out? Are you asking for the Shadow Nation?
No. Believe me, like I said, then people are really going to hate me because, like I said, I've already sent out my donations for the year. I can't help out anymore. But, dude, if you want me to send out $100, you better come over and drop off enough food for my family to eat for 2 weeks because that's a food budget.
I'll send out 20. 30. Any bit would help, you know. Any bit would help.
Oh, anyway, yeah. Guys. You know, I don't, like I said, the donations, even Chrissy says I send too much out in donations. But,
hey, you don't have to say that because on this show for years, we have supported every charity known to man. We just got done with Sandy Merritt and, you know, the Race for the Cure. So, you know, you guys can't say that we are, you know, a-holes because we're simply not. We've supported so many things.
For the gangbang?
Yes, on this show, and we will continue to do so. We were simply making an observation. Moving on, Demon Hunter.
Okay, I've pushed it too far. Sean is getting upset.
Yeah. I'm not upset, baby. I'm walking on sunshine with this.
He loves back. When I bring up the controversial stuff. Dude, I've got a farmer's tan. I just realized this. I have a farmer's tan.
What are you doing? Are you farming in the woods?
I went out on the bike today.
Marijuana? Oh, you did. Tell us about the bike ride.
I took the bike out today. I went down a lot of back roads. I wasn't thinking because 9 times out of 10, I will always throw on like a protective jacket when I'm riding.
Pants.
Well, unlike you, I actually wear pants in public most of the time.
If you like to be restricted, you go ahead. That's your American.
But I went out today. I forgot to put suntan lotion on my arms and I didn't wear a coat.
Right.
And I have... As Sean knows, and some of you who know me know, sun has not touched my skin in about, 20 years, Sean?
Pretty much 20, something like that. I don't know.
When we actually, Sean and I were out in, I think, near Philadelphia, we got rooms at a hotel, and my hotel room literally was in the middle of the hotel, and there were no windows.
If you guys want Nathan to get some sunshine, I dare you just a bucket of ice.
Yes, that would be the challenge for me, Nathan. We dare you to go out and sit in the sun for 20 minutes.
Oh, you did.
That would be the challenge
that's
for me.
Threatening.
Because I hate the sun.
Yeah, it's life threatening. We're not playing here. Yeah.
It's dangerous, man. It causes cancer and stuff.
It's no joke.
It's worse than cigarettes.
It is, Demon Hunter.
For the gangbang?
Hey, I wanted to talk before we run out of time since you stole the mic from me tonight.
Hey, you've still got the 8 minutes here.
No, I got 3 actually. We're at 7:28.
Well, I think our time's going to be thrown off a little bit here, but we've according to the system, we've got like 8 minutes left.
8 minutes before we go into the news segment and stuff.
Yeah, 8 minutes till the next break.
Professionalism, guys.
The new segment. I see what you're saying. Go
ahead. Won't you ask Cleric Tavern if he's having a good time? Cleric, what's going on, buddy? Do you agree with this? Ask him if he agrees. But he does. He agrees. He's a longtime listener. You know, he agrees. There'll be a short delay, but he'll agree eventually.
Hello.
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 Anyway, Demon Hunter, I was looking up. Each week we scour the planet, the universe, for topics, and I found, I got one I want to touch on here, top 10 deadliest animals, because you were talking about Shark Week and stuff?
Yes.
So you would think, you know, the first one would be, what would you think the first top 10 most dangerous?
What would I think the first animal on top 10 deadliest animals would be?
Yep. No, the first one. What do you think top...
The number one would be? With something like...
Hold on, I gotta get to number one. Okay.
I would go with something like grizzly bear.
Grizzly bear.
Yeah.
Okay. Safu ants. Strength in numbers. Huh?
I see.
Yeah, it says Africa's extremely dangerous. They're the number one, by the way. It says Africa is extremely dangerous place. We know that. And anything can die there, Demon Hunter. Safu ants are also called driver ants, safari ants, and army ants. They live primarily in Central and East Africa, born in the jungle and on savanna. They have no eyes. They communicate and navigate by smelling pheromones. And every few years, a colony of 50 million will decide to pick up and move in, search for more fruitful hunting grounds. And they've been known to eat humans, Demon Hunter. They've been known to eat human limbs off.
So have you.
Yeah, but these little boogers sneak into things.
So do you.
And then there's something. Oh, that's true. My first two girlfriends. Anyway, the Clostridium botulinum, most toxic animal on Earth. Apparently, it's like it says a teaspoon of this bacterium, properly distributed, could kill every single human being in the United States. Makes you sleep better, doesn't it? Apparently,
like
it's
a teaspoon of this what?
Clostridium botulinum. Botulinum. It's a, it says most toxic animal on Earth. Apparently, it's a bacteria, but they are putting it in the animal category. And they say a properly distributed teaspoon of this stuff could kill every single human being in the United States. How far off is the zombie apocalypse, my friend?
I tell ya.
That's spooky. Number three, Cape Buffalo. Most unpredictable. It says you'll be standing there. Apparently, it's from the Cape Buffalo is by far the most dangerous game animal on Earth. It is sufficiently thick-skinned to require an elephant rifle, and it's the animal most responsible for the introduction of double-barreled rifles.
Considering the direction they're going with these, I'm almost thinking mosquito has to be in there somewhere.
I don't know. It kills about 15 people per year. Ah, here you go, Demon Hunter. The shark, perfect killing machine. You knew that'd be up there.
Yes.
Yeah, the shark's there. It doesn't say great white or anything, just this shark. Ah, Demon Hunter, you're so smart and intelligent. The mosquito!
Well, there you go.
The highest death toll in the world. Mosquito.
There you go.
You believe that? Highest death toll.
I believe it. Think about it. We've been saying that zombie apocalypse is going to come via mosquito for years.
Dude, that's crazy because I must have the... I'm going to start taking garlic pills. Have you ever heard that? It's like an old gym.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We used to... When I worked in animal care, we used to tell people to feed their pets garlic all the time to keep the bugs from biting them.
Because you sweat that out and it releases that scent and they don't want it, apparently. Because I get hit. I got hit like 7 times. Anyway, they produce or spread malaria and that kills... Most 20% of the time. The human is number 6. Only evil animal. The human.
Well, I don't agree with that because I've always said sharks are evil.
It says, have you noticed that most history books divide eras among major social, political, and disastrous events? And that's the lion's share of these are wars. In 200,000 years of the modern human species, history, our personal history, the only thing we've been able to do consistently well is kill each other. Oh!
Ooh.
What about painting? What about the finer arts? What about the good things we do?
How about the hippopotamus, Sean? Is that anywhere in there?
Hippopotamus? I don't know. We're at number 7. Inland Taipan. Most lethally venomous on land, Demon Hunter. It's a snake. Inland Taipan. Have you ever heard of that?
Snake? Yeah. Yeah,
you haven't heard of the Inland Taipan.
But I didn't think that would actually rank higher than maybe the Black Mamba.
Yeah, it's apparently it destroyed Black Mamba. The median lethal dose of its venom is 30 micrograms per kilogram. It injects an average of 44 milligrams per bite, which is 44,000 micrograms. It can inject up to 110 milligrams in seconds.
Ooh.
It's never been actually known to kill humans, though.
See, the Black Mamba has.
Back to that. Sea wasp, box jellyfish, most lethally venomous in the sea.
Okay.
Jellyfish. You knew jellyfish stings, but apparently this time. The African lion, Demon Hunter, speed and strength is unmatched.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
That's how they get to be king of the jumper. And number 10.
King of the jumper?
King of the jungle. Number 10. Thank you, Sam Adams. Number 10 on our list of most dangerous animals, the African bush elephant.
And I thought you were going to say Africanized honeybee.
And
okay.
Its sheer brute strength has been known to stomp out small villages when on a rampage. That's it, guys. Top 10 deadliest animals in the world. You're welcome. We just saved your life, Demon Hunter. Huh?
Well, we do that here at the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Hey, I wanted to say something real quick. I know we're at 7:34, at least by my time, and my time's correct. Do we need to take a break or anything real quick?
If we're correct on our time.
Yes. Yes.
We've got about 2 minutes.
2 minutes. I don't know if I can do this. But I thought that, I thought this would be important for us. If you guys see up there on the live feed, I got three of the most, I brought up the most haunted, 10 of the most haunted objects of all time, Demon Hunter.
10 of them.
number one, and I've always been interested in this. I'm going to get the author of this book, Jason Haxton, on the show. The Dybbuk box. You guys have probably heard about this. Demoner, explain what a Dybbuk box is real quick, if you please.
The Dybbuk box is actually a wine box of Hebrew origin, Sean, that is said to hold a malicious or, let's say, restless spirit.
Yeah.
And is believed to be haunted by and possessed by this evil being.
There you go. And I've seen this. It's been on Unsolved Mysteries and everything else. This started in September of 2001. Antique dealer, old lady bought it from him. They opened it up inside. There was 103-year-old articles inside the box. Not much else. The woman had been Jewish and apparently...
Isn't this the story that they made the movie The Possession about, Sean?
I don't know.
I think they made the movie The Possession about that. And hey, Sean, guess what?
It's time to tell Pause for the Cause.
Pause for the Cause.
That's it, buddy.
We'll be right back right after this when our folks over there at 102.7 The Hog tell you about all the wonderful stuff that's going on.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only... You guessed it. Mystifying Oracle Radio, your ghost band and demon hunter show. I was just going over the top 10 most haunted objects in the world. Demon Hunter, I you know I have ADD, right? And I'm scanning through this, and I see 12 sexiest body painting, clothes and underwear off to the side, and it's got this chick in a soccer outfit. Oh, my God. She's got her soccer outfit painted on. A Brazilian. Wow.
Let's move. I used to date a few girls that kept their jeans painted on.
Whatever. Ah, the Dybbuk bottle. The Dybbuk box was number one, most dangerous in the world. Of course, Annabelle, which has most recently been made more famous, or the resurrection of Annabelle from the Warrens, of course, and the Conjuring was the last movie that mentioned it. Of course, she's a Raggedy Ann doll. Quick fact, she's not.
She is. She is. They made her out to be like a ventriloquist doll almost in the movie, but she's a Raggedy Ann doll.
2005, Demon Hunter, you might have known, number three in the world. The eBay haunted painting causes sickness, screaming, and fear. And it was two little kids standing behind them. There was little handprints all over the glass door. The kids have no eyes. It's just black. But, yeah, they sold it.
Yeah, I can't imagine having nightmares with that hanging in my house.
Yeah, but I remember seeing this on sale. It, like, sold for $15,000 or something. It's jacked up. Anyway, number four, Myrtle's Plantation. The mirror contains the spirits of a woman and her children. You probably remember hearing about that.
I do. I do remember hearing
number five,
that.
A haunted wedding dress dances on its own, and that's in Colorado Springs.
They should get that for Disney World, the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah. Chairs push people out of them and make people feel sick. Number six, guys, and that's Newport, Rhode Island, and that's at Belcourt Castle, Demon Hunter. We could go out there.
We could go out there.
Let's go out there.
That'd be a neat legend to touch on.
Haunted doll curses. Number seven, those who take his picture without permission, Demon Hunter. You know who he is, right? Key West, Florida.
Oh, we know these people.
Yeah, we know these people. It's Key West, Florida. Robert Eugene Odo was the owner of the doll. I forget what they call it. Anyway, I'm trying. Robert the doll.
That's right.
That's number seven. Number eight, the woman from Lem statue brings death to all the owners. Nicknamed the goddess of death, the woman from Lem is a statue carved from pure limestone. Okay, guys, you want to see it? Look it up. The Anguish Man picture, number nine. Guys, look this up tonight after the show. The Anguish Man, they have it on YouTube. Apparently, they caught it on video with him moving, Demon Hunter. It's a painting, and the face distorts.
I'm more impressed.
There you go. Number 10, the cursed chair of death. Apparently, man was going to death row, said his last thing in England. He was from a small town in England, said, I'd like to be placed in the chair before I die. And that's where he...
died?
Well, yeah, that's where he died, and apparently everybody sits in the chair from there.
Dies?
Yeah, has died. Moving on, Demon Hunter, that's the top 10 most haunted items in the world. But anyway, in the news! It's always fresh. It's always, look at that little selfie there. It's always fresh, it's always exciting. Sometimes. And it's straight from your G&D show vault, and it starts right
now.
Look at this selfie I put on down there. You see her? You can't see it, it's on a delay, but she's, it said, I got it from the top 10, because I was looking up top 10 stuff today. Top 10 worst selfies ever. And this chick is dressed in black glasses. She's standing in front of a coffin, and she took a selfie. She's smiling. It's great.
Those of you who are listening to us on either our archives or on 102.7 The Hog, you can go to our YouTube page, which you can find at www.ghostanddemon.com. From there, go to our YouTube page, and you can check out these photos there.
I just explained it.
You did.
Yeah, I broke it down. It's a girl in black dress. She's smiling, pretty hot, and she's standing in front of this brown coffin taking a selfie. We'll talk about that next week.
We'll talk about that? Okay.
We'll do that next week, Demon Hunter.
Why do people need to take photos in front of coffins? I tell you.
Well, back in the day, that's what they did, Demon Hunter.
Well, back in the day, but are we back in the day, Sean?
We are, Demon Hunter. We are.
Did they serve... They didn't have forks in medieval times, but they had Pepsi?
Pepsi. Classic line. Hey, do you want to remind people how to play this little news game?
Sure, folks. That's right. It's time for Ghost Man and Demon Hunter in the news. That's weird news that Sean and I pick right out of the paper, and we pick them by the titles, so we don't get a chance to read them beforehand. Because of that, we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you get to take a drink. That's right. It's the G&D drinking game. Oh. Of course, we do ask that if you are currently driving in your car listening to us on 102.7 The Hog, or driving anywhere listening to us, don't play the G&D drinking game. You'll get arrested. We don't want to be a part of that.
Right.
Also, if you're planning to do anything important, like, say, talk to someone you love,
yeah,
build a school project for your kid,
preach,
anything that's
going to
require a little mental capacity, please.
Drop buckets of ice on yourself.
Yeah. Listen responsibly.
Hey, Demon Hunter, this just in, Neil Patrick Harris discusses sleeping with women. It's probably the best thing he's ever done since Doogie Howser. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but apparently he is sleeping with women. I never knew that.
I did not know that either. He kind of really stuck out there with the gay pride whole aspect. Hey, brother, have you noticed the Walking Dead news says that they may be a chance that Daryl, the heartthrob of every woman out there watching Walking Dead, the character, not the actor, yes, may be gay.
Homosexual. Yeah, I've heard this.
I was shocked.
Well,
to get this news. Not appalled, mind you, because half my friends are gay.
Right.
And if I said appalled, there would be some gay bashing, but it would be them beating me down.
Yes, they would bash you. And I. But listen, he was alone with Beth, for God's sakes. You know what I'm saying? You're in the apocalypse. He has, was it Karen? No. Who was... Let's just say Karen. And he blew her off. He was like, get out of here. She was like, you want to fool around? Get out of here. What man is going to say get out of here to a woman that it's the apocalypse, man? You've been down and out for a year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does kind of hold to character. This could turn out to be the truth. And A&E has said that if this is the direction the writers choose to go on, not A&E, sorry.
AMC.
AMC. The AMC has said that if this is the direction the writers choose to go, they will not argue or fight it.
He's not gay. Come on. I mean, there's nothing wrong with gay, but he's not. I guarantee he's not.
Hey, Sean, in Corpus Christi.
Oh, I'm just saying.
In Corpus Christi, Texas, an 809-pound tiger shark was caught in the Gulf of Mexico earlier this month.
What'd they catch him for?
It has been cooked and served to more than 90 homeless people.
Hey there, now we're talking.
See, I've always said sharks are evil. Now they're finding a good use for them.
Did PETA throw blood on the homeless people?
For those of you who are listening to us for the first time, you know, shark attack victim here. I'm not one of these guys who goes out and says, their shark was just trying to, like, figure out if I was edible or not. No, I think he was defending his territory and he decided I was a menace.
It was actually a goldfish in a bowl and it sucked on your finger one time.
Hey.
That's terrible.
Well, it was my fault that I was fishing and had a bloody fish there with me, but hey, still came after me. Corpus Christi set up a donation of a 75 pounds of shark meat to be distributed among the homeless and hungry in their area. Apparently, Executive Director K. Kay Berry tells the San Antonio Express, yeah. By the way, Sean, this comes to us from Huffington Post, where we get 90% of our news, oh. That the 12-foot, 7-inch shark was the biggest fish ever donated to the center. A volunteer chef breaded it and baked the meat for the attendees of the meal for the homeless.
Oh!
Hot dog!
Plenty of people eat shark.
Fisherman Ryan Spring of San Antonio had said he caught the shark after reeling it in for more than 7 hours.
Oh my God.
You know, it's not like he had it mounted and put up on his wall. 7 hour fight. The shark's not gonna make it. Gotta do something with it, right?
That does not make Jaws happy.
Well, I've been having nightmares of Jaws since I was a kid, so.
That's true.
Barry says the volunteer chef did a great job preparing the food. Most people really enjoyed it. And the center says there is enough leftovers to serve up some shark stew next week.
And he was later quoted as saying, "You're going to need a bigger boat." Whatcha? Huh?
Whatcha?
Yes, the swimming with bow-legged women.
Thanks, Quint. That's a little low. Was that low?
Blue. I'd say it was blue.
Blue. Meet the zombie chicken demon hunter that apparently made it out of a freezer alive.
Who was it mating with?
I don't know. It made it out. I didn't say mating.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Who was it making out with?
This comes out of our friends, of course, from the Huffington Post, the reporter Arn Greenwood. Thanks, Arnie. We love you. Cat Gullhorn, drink up, guys, didn't even want the chicken to begin with. About a year ago, one of Gullhorn's neighbors just outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico, decided it was time to kill his birds. Apparently he doesn't know how to do it too well, huh?
I guess.
I don't know. He chose to use a BB gun and shot the chickens in the head, she says. It says he chose to use a BB gun and shot the chicken in the head, she says. What's the chicken a she and she's reporting?
We're not correcting our friends over at the Huffington Post.
What's going on over there? You guys
that might be a bit of misprint.
Yeah. He gave two to Gullhorn and her husband, Yvonne, who wrapped them in plastic bags and stuck them in the freezer to defeather and otherwise deal with it later. But what happened next, she says, caught Evan by surprise. About a day later, Demon Hunter, Shadow Nation, he opened the freezer and found one of the chickens still in repose, while the other was sitting there, looking fully alive, very cold, and, I can't say that, ticked off. Huh? What's going
on? Well, I'll say, Sean.
Says Gullhorn and Little Stymied. They called him Stymied. What does one do with such an animal? They kept him alive. That's good. That's a heartwarming story.
Heartwarming or just blood-warming?
Blood-warming. Chicken-warming would be more, you know.
I would say, Sean. Hey, Sean, a man was fined for pretending to be a ghost at a cemetery.
Okay.
Making woo noises around the mourners.
Oh.
Yep. What a ghouligan. This comes to us from the Huffington Post again.
Yes.
An unemployed British man from Portsmouth was arrested April 29th and later fined after pretending to be a ghost near mourners at a grave.
He wasn't unemployed. What do they call that? A community actor? Or a, what do they call it? Street actor. Yeah.
Street actor. Yeah, that's all it was.
He's an artist, Demon Hunter.
According to the Portsmouth News,
yeah.
While a nearby family was paying their respects to a lost loved one, at Kingston Cemetery,
okay.
A drunk 24-year-old Anthony Stollard, sorry, have a drink, folks, was throwing himself backwards. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but throwing himself backwards, waving his arms about, and going, woo!
I like this guy already.
Prosecuting attorney Tim Conconen said
drink
in
up,
court,
guys.
Yeah, there's another drink for you, folks. The names always get me, Sean.
See?
Prior to his brewish behavior, Stollen was seen kicking a ball around with a friend near the grave.
Okay.
while the football was going on, I don't like the fact that they're still calling soccer football.
Football!
This
football.
Defendant was effectively saying loudly, being, and, no, sorry, this offend, this, sorry,
what's
this
up,
defendant
homie?
Was effectively singing loudly,
yeah,
being disrespectful,
right,
among the graves.
What's up, homie?
So, you know what, Sean? When I first saw this, I thought we were going to find out that there was a group ghost hunting out there.
Yeah.
And that this guy was trying to play a trick on them or something like that. But now that I read it and I find out that, like, somebody was out there mourning a lost loved one.
Yeah.
This sounds like, not only do I think this guy should have been fined, I think this guy should have been sent to jail.
Jail? How long would you put him away for, Demon?
Oh, you know, I'm not saying he needed to be put away for a long time, but, I mean, if somebody's standing around saying goodbye to a lost loved one and somebody comes along and pretty much makes fun of their loss,
yeah,
I'd say 2 to 3 months in prison would be fair.
Oh, I don't know. There goes my Saturday nights. Anyway, Demon Hunter, next up in the news, our good friends at the Huffington Post, L.A. delivery service brings booze and underwear at the same time.
Well, there, you're safe now, Sean, because you've been needing those two things for a long time.
See? I love L.A. Anyway, the future of delivery services, Demon Hunter, will arrive on Los Angeles doorsteps starting Friday afternoon, thanks to a company that is offering to bring alcohol and underwear at the same time. You don't get it yet? Listen up. Here we go. Saucy, an alcohol delivery service, is also partnering with Me Undies, a Los Angeles-based underwear company, for a week-long promotion where customers can order booty shorts and boxers along with the alcohol, and undies are being sold in special sleepover packs that cost between $40 and $100. Wow. Depending on the number of customers, each pack includes a fresh pair of underwear, socks, a t-shirt, sunglasses, a hangover, fighting vitamin, and your choice of alcohol and mixers, according to the Los Angeles Times. Saucy will start delivering, Demon Hunter, the booze and briefs packages at noon, but discerning customers may want to target their orders between 4 and 9. That's when the company plans to have at least some of the sleepover packs delivered by underwear models in nothing but their skivvies. Huh? I wonder if they'd go make a trip to Indianapolis.
You know, that would be an interesting interesting little thing there for you and I to do, Sean. Go out, order ourselves some undies.
It's simply research.
I don't
research.
Wear thongs, though. You're going to have to do the thongs.
It's simply that. Research for the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do they deliver boxers, Sean?
I don't know. Yeah, it said boxers.
Okay, then we're all good. A night of drinking, eating, who knows what else, and when we're all done, we have clean boxers. We're good.
Drinking, eating, and clean boxers. Why do you need clean boxers? What's going to happen? Where?
Well, I like that hot and spicy food.
Oh, well, you got to have a toilet closed, Demon.
Yeah, well, you never know.
What do you say? We're at 55. Want to move on?
Well, one last thing, Sean, I just want to throw this out. Yeah. Dog elected mayor in Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
We've always heard about, like, Garfield getting elected and things like that, or being put on the ballot and stuff. But apparently, dreams do come true, even for canines. Uh-oh. From the Huffington Post this week, a 7-year-old dog named Duke was elected mayor of Cormorant, a small town in Minnesota. And 12 residents each paid $1 to cast their vote, local outlets reported. So apparently there's a dog mayor in Minnesota.
Well, that sounds very good, Demon Hunter. Was that our middle break for the guest?
That was our next break, Sean, and you know what that means.
That means we're out of time again for Legend X.
No, because we still have a few minutes if you want to take a quick break, come back with Legend X. You want to say Legend X right now, Sean, or do you want to move on?
Let's just move on. What do you think?
All right, we'll save Legend X for next week, folks. We got one lined up. You'll enjoy it. Right now, let's take a quick break. Pause for the cause at 102.7 The Hog FM, and we'll be right back.
Hey, guys, tonight's band, The Columbine. Tonight's guest, author Thomas L. Free, stops by to talk everything spook, huh? Tonight's guest, band, like I said, the Columbines, the night song, The Devil Is Crossing Me, Demon Hunter. We'll be right back, guys.
There, it's Sven Gulli, your favorite horror host on MeTV Indianapolis, Saturday nights at 10 p.m. And right now, you're joining me listening to Ghost Man and Demon Hunter. Where else?
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Tonight's guest, get ready, guys. He is a graduate of both the University of New Mexico and the University of Louisville. He is an author of Shaker Ghost Stories from Pleasant Hill, Kentucky, The Fog Swirler, and 11 other ghost stories, Strange and Wonderful Things, and much, much more. Please help us welcome Mr. Thomas Freeze. Thomas, what's going on, brother?
He's going to be with us in just a second, brother.
He's going to be with us in just a second. Okay, well, we can wait just a second. We have a lot to talk about. We do. We have quite
a bit. Let's hope so.
Well, we do. We do. Do you want to go into, well, we could do the legend. Hey, let's go over the legend real quick. What was that?
Well, I'm holding for him right now, so hold on 1 second.
Okay, let's hold for him. We were going to talk about the Honey Monster. Honey Island Monster tonight, guys. I think it's like a spinoff of the Bigfoot again, but we wanted to include all those in our Legend X series because... Yo, Thomas!
Doing pretty good.
Hey, I just did a huge intro for you. You want me to do it again?
Oh, I mean, whatever.
Graduate of both the University of New Mexico and University of Louisville, author of Shaker Ghost Stories from Pleasant Hill, Kentucky, The Fog Swirler, and 11 other ghost stories, Strange and Wonderful Things, and much, much more. Please help us welcome author Thomas Freeze. Thomas, what's going on, brother?
Hey, that is amazing. Thank you for the intro.
You're welcome, buddy. That's what we do, you know? I should have stayed in school, but...
Then we'd all be employed, Sean, and we wouldn't be able to do this anymore.
That's true. What are you going to do? But, Thomas, I'm so excited to get you on tonight. Thanks for coming on. You're such an interesting man. And first off, I want to say thank you for your service in the community because you do so much good work with the kids out there, and I love it, man. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I'm really pleased to be on your show.
Well, thanks so much, buddy. And, you know, I'm from Indianapolis. My cohort there, he's from Connecticut. Now, I've lived out here, born and raised in Indy, and been up and down the streets to Louisville, the haunted Octagon Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. I've been all over, done these little webisodes for our little 8-year running radio program we have here, and I've done the Octagon Hall and many other places out there. But what attracted me most to you is you are, sir, a dying breed, one of the ghost storytellers.
Yeah, it's interesting. The art of storytelling, you'd think, would always be in vogue because it's really all we have. You know, the personal possessions and the, you know, kind of petty achievements, they come and go, and then you get to be whatever, 75 or 85, and really all you have to connect you to this life and, you know, to other people is personal narrative, is, you know, stories. So it's a sacred thing, and I really love telling stories, and my favorite program is Ghost Stories. And I'll tell you what, if you want to keep, you know, 30 kindergartners still and paying attention, tell them some ghost stories.
That's what I say. You say history to most kids, they go, ah, oh, shucks. You say haunted history, every eye in the class is in the straight at the head of the class, buddy.
Yeah, and they have stories themselves. Go, you know, these kids, they'll try to talk to me afterwards, and the teacher's trying to drag little Johnny off to the classroom. He's like, but wait, I want to tell Mr. Freeze about that lady I saw in the basement, or they have an invisible friend, or they saw some orbs floating around, or they're trying to play with the Ouija board, and something went down. And you can imagine, you know, just like kids are experimenting with anything else, you know, when they get to be middle school and teens, they're also checking out psychic reality, and they're, you know, playing with the Ouija board, or they're, you know, going to those haunted places, and they have experiences, you know, ever since they were little. So I just feel like it honors the children, and it teaches them that, you know, there's this other reality that we need to pay attention to, and that honors the children, and we can listen to their stories, and so they know what the real deal is.
You know, I want to say, Thomas, we haven't had a chance to write a book yet. Nathan and I, since we did the TV show and everything, we've been talking about different aspects. I've always wanted to write children's book, and we'll get into that later. But I got to get into a couple schools. They asked me after the TV show, of course, to come out and talk to these kids. It was called University High School. And these kids are, little that I know, it's for like tiny rocket scientists. It's like, I was like, no questions, please.
They would totally relate to the tech toys, though, for the ghost hunters, and they would probably relate to, you know, catching EVPs and infrared scanners and all the, you know, ghost hunter toys.
But, you know, that's the thing about our show. Our show is the American storyteller, and because that's what we do. We tell stories about the monsters and the ghosts and everything, and we go one up. We go looking for them and tell you what we find. But the one thing I've always killed me about ghost hunting and stuff is the boring equipment. The equipment gets in the way of the actual experience. So, yeah, we have the equipment there, but the story, like you said before, the story is the ghost. That's what lives on, and that's what creeps in your mind late at night and around the campfire. What got you involved? Were you little boy when you said, I want to tell stories? What happened?
I think I felt at an early age that kind of metaphysical nudging that I grew up Catholic, but I really felt like there was you know, like a personal spiritual journey for me, and I believe that, you know, I could sense things, and you know, my dad used to always tell me, you know, you're too sensitive. So I was one of those kids that was tuned in to those subtle things, and it just took me many years before I realized that, you know, that's not really that unusual, that there's this, you know, world out there. People see auras, they have telepathic thoughts, they see loved ones that have passed away, and I just believe that we have a constant ability to interact with the spirit world at any given moment, and we're hardwired to be able to do that. So, you know, after a while, I just started exploring that you know, part of my spirituality, and giving myself permission to honor that. And then, and as I did that, you know, you just connect with kindred spirits, and a lot of those kindred spirits are the ones that have shared stories in my books. And I think you're really right about, you know, the tech stuff gets in the way of the actual experience, because really, when it comes down to it, you know, we just need to keep our eyes and ears open. And I tell kids that, the best, you know, meter that you can utilize is right there in your solar plexus. And when you walk into a haunted house and you know the spirits don't want you in there, you'll feel that in your solar plexus. And if you're in touch with your intuition and, you know, your gut feeling, and you're smart, you know, you get the heck out of there.
Well, you know, that when Sean and I were doing TV, people would never say, "I was so impressed when that meter went off." They, you know, they would say, I was in shock when, you know, I saw the look on Nathan's face when he thought he saw something. I was like, when the door slammed, or when Sean thought he got grabbed by something underwater. That's what impressed people, because we were experiencing it and they were going along for the ride, and it wasn't about the meters going off.
Right, you're so right, and I think that's why I collect stories, and it's all about the personal experience, because a lot of the stories I have are not from famous places. They're just someone out in their backyard, or someone in a suburban home, or someone that just happens to be, you know, at a bed and breakfast that was once, you know, a Civil War field hospital post-battle. And so it's really not about building up some great legend about, you know, these kind of designated spots that are like, ooh, you know, that's a really haunted place. Well, you know, the medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said in the 1970s. You know, the medium is that, you know, we are connected to the spirit world, and we can access that anytime, anywhere. You can sit on your sofa and tune in to a deceased relative and just say hello. You know, you can you know, be wherever you want on this planet. And I know there's, you know, there's energies and there's intense places and all that, but I think the bugaboo is we really don't have to have that formula. We actually have, you know, the means, you know, by the way we're created, you know, within ourselves to tune into the spirit reality anytime, anywhere. So one lady, she saw a ghost at the post office. I mean, she just thought it was another customer until he walked through the, you know, the kind of that station, you know, the table in the middle of the room where they have, you know, you fill out the post office forms. You know, when he walked through that, she was like, oh, I get it.
In later news, she retired from the United States Postal Service.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Hey, but I tell you what's it feel like? And I want to get into the whole psychic thing a little bit later, but one of my two favorite books, and I watched this last night because they made it into a show,
Oh, sorry, Sean, I lost you there for a second.
Oh, two authors, Mr. Ray Bradbury and Mr. Scott Corbett. Now, my top story, because I didn't have many friends when I was little, and I lived on the street with a lot of old people and no children, so I seen one time, remember the old ABC weekend specials?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they would say, jump into a book, and they would take a book and they turn it into a little TV show in order to get kids to read more. So Scott Corbett wrote a story called The Red Room Riddle. Have you ever heard of this? Yeah, I know.
No, I haven't.
You got to look it up, James, Thomas. It's so cool. It's about a ghost guy, a kid, and his bulldog, and these guys go to the house. Anyway, the other one, Ray Bradbury, The Halloween Tree, my friend. What's it feel like to be a teller of stories, ghost stories specifically, and spooky stories, to have your stuff on the shelves with authors like this? You know what I mean? It's got to be surreal.
It's a great honor, and not only as a storyteller, but also to connect with that metaphysical notion that we're not alone, and that just because someone died, a loved one, a relative, or a friend, that, you know, doesn't cut off access to communication. And I think all those great writers, including, you know, Ray Bradbury, they just were opening up our mind that this is an endless universe, that there are so many ways we can interact with, you know, what we call physical reality, and even physical reality itself is an illusion. And, you know, you can figure that out when you see that, you know, a loved one, you know, come floating through the walls, or, you know, you can connect with someone that's 3,000 miles away. So I think when I tell stories to children, you know, they get all that instinctively. And so, you know, I tell them some stories that are fake outs, you know, say, hey, look, you know, you still have to use your rational mind. Not every sound means that it's a ghost. And then I'll tell them some fake out stories, whether, you know, where some folks were faked out, whether it was intentional or unintentional. And then I'll tell them the true stuff. And children of any age experience psychic reality. So you can be a, you know, a baby in your crib and look up and see, you know, an angel floating there, or, you know, you can be a toddler. And, you know, sometimes if the kids say, you know, there's something under the bed, or there's something in the closet, you know, just might want to listen to them and hear what they have to say, and see if you can get them to sketch it out, to do some kind of drawing, because kids are amazing. They can accurately describe, you know, period of clothes from 100 years ago where they would, you know, be young and have no idea what that was like. So there's a lot of stories of invisible friends.
Now, I've seen your book for children, The Halloween Sleepwalker, and I've seen a friend of yours did the artwork, and that's what drew me to it, because I'm a kind of a halfway artist. I haven't studied, but I've just, it runs in the family, and I do a lot of illustrations for the newsletter at my work and things like that. The artwork, by the way, is great. I love it. But could you tell us a little bit about that book without giving the whole premise away?
Sure. So this is ostensibly a fiction story, but of course, you know, a lot of science fiction starts as fiction and then ends up, you know, coming true. You know, like Jules Verne, you know, writing about going to the moon and 20,000 leagues under the sea and submarines, and then lo and behold, later, you know, that actually happened. So I think fiction writers can be channeling something that is pretty close to truth. But anyway, this is a story about a boy who wanders out at midnight on Halloween Eve, and he has some interesting experiences. He meets up with some witches in the cornfield, and they ask him, invite him to take a bite of an enchanted apple, which he does, and then he gets the second sight, and he sees all these ghosts and other crazy things, and then eventually he gets back home, and as you read it and look at it, you can kind of decide for yourself if it was a dream, or if he was sleepwalking, or if he actually had some kind of encounter. But it's basically about the second sight. It's about the third eye. It's about seeing those things which are usually invisible to us. And I think it's just a fun way to bring that forth, and a safe way, because, you know, some folks may be reluctant to, you know, examine that for themselves or for their children. And so this puts it out there in a kind of a cute and fun way. The boy has some pretty good adventures. And I think folks will really enjoy reading that if they get a chance.
Now, being an artist yourself, and you had somebody else do the artwork for the book, but being an artist for yourself, do you ever incorporate your interest in the ghost story and things like that into your artwork?
Yes, actually, I have some really fun woodcraft. I work a lot with wood, and so I've got little ghosties and Day of the Dead stuff that I make out of wood, pins and earrings and pendants. And then about a year ago, I started making tombstones. So they were, you know, just made out of wood, and they're small, so you could wear them as a pin. But I got online, and I looked up tombstone sayings that were telling or humorous or just odd. And so that's a lot of fun. I have something called my Halloween tree, and there's a lady in Kentucky who makes trees the traditional way, you know, synthetic trees not being plastic. But in the old days, you could make them out of goose feathers, and they would twist up the goose feathers onto an armature after they dyed the goose feathers, you know, green or whatever color. But this lady had orange, you know, dyed feathers, so I bought that, and I was like, hey, you know, I am still going to make this a Halloween tree. So onto the Halloween tree, I have all these cool things, wooden figures that are from some of my stories and books, like Halloween Sleepwalker, and I have the ghosties and the Day of the Dead, and, you know, a jack-o'-lantern, and the tombstone saying. So when I show up at a school to do storytelling, you know, not only do I have 9 books of ghost stories and just a whole bucket full of the actual stories, a lot of true tales, my own experiences, but, you know, I've got some of these really fun, you know, kind of artsy items where the kids can see that, you know, I'm totally into it.
Hey, Thomas, we just have to take a 2-second break for our friends over at 102.7 The Hog so they can fit in those wonderful commercials that they love to remind us about. Hey, Sean, 2 seconds and we'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation. This is your Mystifying Oracle Radio, and we're talking to author Thomas Freeze. Huh?
Freeze.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
What a great name. Freeze. The Freeze Man cometh.
Does anybody ever walk up to you and just say, Mr. Freeze?
Oh, it was so funny because, you know, I mean, you know, kids never make fun of each other in school, right?
Never.
So I was in high school in Chicago area, and we had, our physical education, uniforms, and of course they didn't trust us to take them home and get them clean and bring them back, so they just laundered it all for us. So we had to take a Sharpie and write our first initial and last name on this kind of a rectangle on the front of the chest of the shirt. So mine was T-Freeze, so they all called me Tasty Freeze.
That's right, ladies. Tasty Freeze. Hey, I tell you, Thomas, let's get down to it, because this coming weekend, I've been looking at places to go. I talked to you a little bit about it before, and I wanted to film a little short for our show, which we travel around and try to do. Shakertown. I've been looking at that in Pleasant Valley, Kentucky. Or Pleasant Hills, I'm sorry. And could you tell us a little bit about the stories out there? I'm still looking around. Hopefully tonight, when you tell us some of the stories about the places you've been, I'll get a better cap on something out here in the Midwest I could check out.
Sure. That'd be great. I know people are really drawn to Shakertown, whether it's for Shaker history or just to attend a conference there or to go like a couple and just have a real nice, weekend. It's almost like a bed and breakfast. And then some folks have read about the Shaker Ghost, and maybe they're intrigued to go to Shakertown. It's a really beautiful place. I love going there. It's very pastoral and pretty, and it's out in the country. And it's not too far from Louisville, not too far from Lexington, and it's out US 68. And it's actually, not too far from Perryville. And the Shakers wrote in their journals about hearing the cannons and, when the Battle of Perryville and the Civil War was going on. So it's got a lot of history. It's not too far from the Kentucky River, and the retreating Civil War armies of both sides actually went right through Shakertown because U.S. 68 used to go right down the middle of the village. It's now moved a little bit south of the village, but they would, head over to the Shaker Landing to get across the Kentucky River on their, military adventures. But it's a beautiful place to go. You can stay overnight. There's a wonderful restaurant there. You can take classes and study up on the Shakers. You can listen to folks singing the Shaker songs in the 1820 Meeting House. In fact, I was a Shaker singer for 10 years, and that's while I was rubbing elbows with the folks that worked there or spent a lot of time there or
now,
guests who had stories.
Wait a minute, Tom. Are there still Shakers?
Well, no, not at Pleasant Hill. There's a few Shakers over in Sabbath-day Lake, Maine. Shakers had something like 19 communities in the eastern half of the United States. They had 2 communities in Kentucky, 4 in Ohio, and other ones scattered over around the east. And there's a few Shakers over in Sabbath-day Lake, Maine. But now, basically, Shakertown is kind of like a living museum where there's employees who will dress up and work out in the fields, or you can, people dress up like Shakers and will be there in the different buildings that you wander into when you're doing your tour, and some folks do musical programs.
I was going to say, because Shakers, their communities don't really grow that fast, considering they're not really allowed to have sex or do anything like that, correct?
Yeah, the Shakers really reached their height in the early 1800s, and they were very devoted to the spiritual life, so they, forego, life as a, married couple, and they, the urban legend is they died out because they were celibate, and everyone, if you talk about the Shakers, someone, will always bring that up, and everyone in the room laughs. But it really doesn't quite fully explain their increase nor their decrease, because when the Shakers came over from England, led by Mother Ann Lee, a working-class, illiterate woman, there were just 7 of them, and 30 years later, there were 7,000. So the celibacy doesn't explain, their increase or their decrease. They took advantage of this really strong spiritual fervor in the United States, because over historical periods on the planet, we have these ebbs and flows and, highs and lows of spiritual, kind of mania or fervor, whatever. And, right now we're obviously in a fairly materialistic phase. But in the early 1800s, in Cane Ridge Revival in Kentucky, 30,000 people came to listen to preachers. So there was something really strong going on, and the Shakers just happened to be there at the right time, the right place to take advantage of that. They sent missionaries from New York, and then they founded this new Shaker Village. So there were a lot of families that joined, and the men and women would live separately. And unlike some of the real crazy cults here in the United States, they gave the children free will choice on whether or not to remain, you know, when they turned of age. And only one out of four of the children, you know, chose to remain, you know, with the Shakers and continue to live the Shaker life. But the Shakers basically were much more interested in spirituality than the physicality in terms of procreation. So at one point, they were adding their numbers like crazy. And then, you know, the materialism in our country just kind of returned, and everyone was wanting to move to the city and forget about country life, and the Industrial Revolution was kicking in gear. So they just, people didn't care too much about handmade goods and growing your own, you know, crops for clothing and, you know, the spinning wheels and the old ways. And so, you know, they just faded out, and they decided not to accept new members. They could have accepted new members, but they basically voted themselves out of existence. Hmm. So for them, the spirituality and the relationship with God was paramount. And I think because of that purity, you know, they really had a lasting effect on the history of religions here in the United States, just in terms of that willingness to, you know, put God first and live that life. And but anyway, the Shakers were amazing. They wrote 30,000 songs. More songs than any other Christian denomination. And we would sing those songs in the 1820 Meeting House. We would do the Shaker song and dance. We would do scripted performances. And a lot of things would happen because we're there in their, you know, homes. They built this with their own labor. They didn't employ slaves. They believed that men and women and black and white were equal. They were very progressive for their time. And women had a strong voice in the spiritual leadership. And the Shakers at Pleasant Hill had, at one time, I think they peaked at about 500 members, and then they died off about the 1920s. And
they were a very peaceful people, correct? So a lot of people believe ghosts are created through, like, extraordinary events that are caused at their death. What do you think would create Shaker ghosts in a place like that?
Well, that's an excellent question, because you think, well, that car accident or that bar fight, you know, that leaves a trauma kind of in the space and time. And so you have that, you know, that tragedy that happened there. And so you're just going to have a lot of, you know, psychic imprints, or, you know, like that field in Pennsylvania where the 9/11, you know, plane crash. You know, there's a lot of reports of ghostly activity there by the security personnel. But I think basically the Shakers created a portal for their own passage to and from, you know, the spiritual realm. And so they lived the life of the spirit. They could, in Meeting House, in their Sunday service, they could be slain in the spirit and lay there for 24 hours. They saw visions. They spoke and sang in tongues. So they were pretty much already, you know, fully in the spirit world as much as you can be. And I think they've just returned to be guardians of the place, so that when you're there, you just feel that peaceful, you know, kind of a firm presence. I mean, you know, they were living life in the 19th century, so, you know, there was a kind of a self-discipline to that. But, right, they're not like traumatized souls, you know, where something bad happened. And they just are there to let people know that, that you know, that their energy is there, that they built this heaven on earth. And three boys were wandering around the old graveyard there. This happened in the early 1960s, before it was, when it was tenant farming, before it was fixed up so you could visit it now in the public trust. And the man who told me this story was in his 60s. He said it was him and his twin brother and another brother who, another friend, a third boy who often got into trouble. And they found one of the Shaker tombstones. They were looking at it, couldn't read it because of the moss and lichen that grew on it. So one of the boys scooped up some of the dry dirt on that summer day and used it to try to rub off the moss so they could read it. But he didn't know it. He was accidentally, as he rubbed, he was pushing the tombstone to tilt it over in its socket. So he stepped back. That was one of the twins. And the third boy, the one who often got into trouble, he just walked right up, gave it a shove, and pushed it over into the dirt.
Hmm.
So the twins were, you know, raised a little bit better than that to respect the living and the dead. They got down there and they tried to lift it up, but, you know, 6 foot of marble can weigh 600 pounds. They couldn't lift it up. The third boy joined them, all three boys, all six hands, they couldn't lift it up. So the man telling the story, one of the twins, said he wandered over. They went away about 30 feet away to take a look at another one of the Pennebakers, the Shaker tombstones, and then he said he felt this rush of cold air in his cheek. you look back to where they had been, and the tombstone that was down the dirt was now back upright.
Oh.
And he said they got out of there a lot quicker than they got in.
Now there's a.
I hear that a lot about young people investigating cemeteries.
Yeah. Now there's
I think there was a Shaker elder, you know, that saw three boys that couldn't fix their mistake, and he just decided to help them.
There you go. Hey, there's a lot of empty buildings out there, old homes. Looks like old churches or farms or whatever. Do those sit empty year-round and there's just one in there or what?
So are you talking about the non-Shaker or just in general?
The Shaker Village there.
Oh, in the Shaker Village, a lot of empty homes?
Yeah, there's little houses and stuff where they would live, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, at least at Pleasant Hill, they're all utilized. So one's a gift shop, one's a restaurant, one is, and most of them actually are for overnight stays. So they have conferences there, and they have couples or families that come for the weekend. People do their retreats out there. They have corporate events. They've got craft shows at Shakertown. They have sheep to shawl, something like that, you know, like a whole farm life. Yeah. About the Shakers, because the Shakers were really into the animal husbandry and, you know, good bloodlines and the cattle and everything. And so they were very industrious. There's demonstrations in some of the buildings where there's folks that are hired to kind of dress like the Shakers and make handmade boxes and handmade brooms. And so it's very educational. And also just, you know, there's 3,000 acres of original Shaker land where you can just hike some wonderful trails, and some of them are, meant for horse riding. So you just have to go walk around there. It's just amazing.
Thomas, what's the vibe out there at night when the sun goes down?
You know, I feel secure. I feel safe. I feel a nice feeling, but I also don't feel alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just feels like there's people walking around, you know, or that when you're in your room, you know, that a Shaker could just walk right in. And in fact, that's what's happened a number of times. One lady was checking in her key. She was leaving after her stay, and she said to the front desk lady, your housekeeping comes awful early. And the lady said, well, what are you talking about? Well, she said, this lady came out of my room at 5 in the morning dressed as a Shaker, and she asked me if I wanted some fresh linens, you know, which is a really old term for towels. And that lady was in her 60s. Her mother, obviously older still, was in the other single bed. And she said, okay, whatever, just please don't wake my mom. So she said the woman dressed as a Shaker kind of breezed in the bathroom, brought fresh towels. And then as she was leaving, she said, this is the service that we provide. Okay. So the lady at the front desk said, well, ma'am, I have to tell you, first of all, that, you know, our housekeeping doesn't start till 8 in the morning. And, you know, no one's going to come in 3 hours early. And she said, second, you know, of course, your room's all locked. You know, there's, you know, no one will be coming into your room. And she said, you know, none of these, you know, folks that work here, you know, would be just kind of breezing into your room like that. So the lady said, well, you know, it's really bizarre that that happened. But, you know, the Paul Harvey of that story is, it turned out the lady that got the custom Shaker room service, she had worked for hospice all her life. So I really believe that there's this interactive factor with the spirit. So they recognize our spirit. Even if they didn't know us in life, they recognize our character and who we are. And I believe that the Shakers saw that here's a woman who had served others all her life, and, you know, they decided, now we're going to serve you.
Yeah, and some people say like attracts like in the afterlife. The thing about it is, let's switch to battlefields now, because that's a huge topic with us. Actually, our show was founded standing at the a place called Barlow's Knoll in Gettysburg. So, you know, I'm excited about the southern battlefields. I've been to Perryville. I've been to the Battle Cordon, which is actually a small little spot in Indiana that was the only northern or battle fought on northern soil other than Gettysburg. What battle sites that you know of around Kentucky or wherever that are reportedly haunted are the ones you've been to? Outside of the big ones like Shiloh, Gettysburg.
Yeah, and I have stories from Gettysburg from people but I couldn't put it in because the editor only wanted stories from the Southern Theater and Campaign. I have stories from Ohio and from New Mexico. and all kinds of places, but you know they're not from you know the Southern theater. So
well, where's Camp Payne?
In Kentucky was a big you know a border state, a big battleground. Not only Perryville, but dozens of other battles. And the crazy thing though about Civil War ghosts is so many of them occur not at the battle sites, but actually, you know, just out in the country where they were in transit. Or maybe they were wounded from a battle, you know, 50 miles away, but they died, you know, in retreat. Or the Confederate guerrillas were operating all over the state.
Yeah.
And, you know, even around Perryville, radiating out about 20 or 30 miles, any Annabella mansion, you know, any building of any size was pressed into use, you know, as a field hospital. So you can go stay in some bed and breakfast businesses, and you're, you know, not right at Perryville at all. You're not on the battlefield. And yet, you can wake up in the middle of the night and see, like, a you know, a Union surgeon over you with a scalpel. So there's many, many, many sightings that occur outside the battlefield. So in Kentucky, not only do you have the battlefield, but you've just got a whole plethora of other places where, you know, whether it's an old building that was a field hospital, a bed and breakfast, or, you know, some old institutions. There's stories of Civil War ghosts, you know, in Oldham County, which is just outside Louisville, which is Jefferson County. And, you know, there was no battle, you know, in Oldham County at all. But the Civil War ghosts, the most fascinating thing about them, and I could get into a lot of stories if there was time, but is that they're even active after 150 years. And I think what's happening there is we don't see the time frame for the spirits where there's reasons for them to hang around. So one guy was walking on the battlefield in a southern state, and he felt, as he was up on a hilltop looking at one of the historical markers, and there was a, you know, kind of a cannon, you know, artillery piece set there, he just felt some invisible hands grab his shoulders, turn him around to look downhill, and he heard a voice say, "This is what we saw that day. Never let it happen again." So I think the Civil War ghosts are here to remind us, because we still have deep divisions in our societies in many ways here in the United States. And I think they're here to remind us, you know, it's not worth it. Do whatever you can to keep the peace with your fellow, you know, citizens in America, because a true Civil War is just so devastating.
Now, what about the fort? What fort did you say out there in Ohio? Is that a Civil War fort as well?
I'm having trouble hearing your audio. You asked about a Civil War fort in Ohio?
Yeah, you had mentioned a fort. Can you hear me okay, Thomas?
Yeah, it's just a little bit fuzzy. I'm sorry, a Civil War sword?
Fort.
Fort. He was asking about a Civil War fort in Ohio.
I can't recall that. There was a fort that was built in northern Kentucky to prevent access to Cincinnati, Ohio. So I'm not knowledgeable about Civil War forts in Ohio, but there was a big earthen embankment and a fort built just in northern Kentucky. I can't remember if it was in Covington. In addition, there's some tunnels in northern Kentucky, you know, leading to the Ohio River where the slaves crossed, and there's stories about ghostly activity in those tunnels.
Right. Now, I know we're running out of time. We're actually over right now, but you're so fascinating. We're keeping you on a little bit, so I apologize, Thomas. But let's talk real quick about the Fog Swirler, Strange and Wonderful Things, and let's just run down your books real quick and where people can get them.
Oh, sure. Thanks a lot. Well, I've got my website, which unfortunately is not a click and purchase, but folks can email me through the website, or my email is thomasfreese@bellsouth.net. And I'm also on Facebook, and all my books are on online or Amazon or the publisher's pages. Now, Strange and Wonderful Things and Fog Swirler are totally excellent ghost stories. They are fiction. Some people prefer nonfiction, but really what I call them is fiction that falls not far from fact. So many, many stories I've written, fiction stories, I've heard stories later, true stories that very much parallel the fiction stories. So those are good books. They're paperbacks, and then I have a couple in the hardbound series, and these are like 10 years of collecting is Ghost Spirits and Angels. That's by Acclaim Press, and I'll be happy to send people information about my books and also about booking me as a speaker or storyteller. But Ghost Spirits and Angels has not only ghost stories, but also tales of encounters with angels and spirits, and I consider spirits to be those things that were never human, and that goes for the good spirits as well as the less pleasant ones. And then in my sequel, More True Tales of Ghost Spirits and Angels, I also have, besides those three categories of ghost spirits and angels, I have stories of nature spirits, or what we would call the fairy folks. And the third in that sequel is actually a paperback. It's with a different publisher. It's called Eerie Encounters. Those are all true stories, same deal, ghost spirits and angels, a really wide range of encounters, and also including UFO stories. So, you know, to be honest, I say the weirder the better, whatever you got, whether it's an encounter with a ghost, spirits, angel, Sasquatch, UFO, witch, you know, whatever it is, I just think it needs to be out there in print, and these are things we need to talk about and not sweep under the rug.
Right. Well, I tell you, Thomas, we're out of time, but I once heard it said, the storyteller is the keeper of the spirit. And that's what you are, my friend. You share it with adults and the young alike, and keep doing what you're doing, man, because we need more of you.
Well, my pleasure to be on your show, and thank you so much for that compliment and feedback. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Thomas, would you hang on the line just one moment with us as we wrap up? We'd love to ask you one more question at the after the show.
Okay, sure.
Brother?
Yes.
You know what it means.
It's time to pay the bills.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, guys. Hey, special thanks to our tonight's guest, Thomas Fries. Check all his stuff out at thomaslfries.com. 102.7 FM, The Hog, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, and the new Action Audio apps. Check them out. They want to know, are you listening? Check them out, actionaudioapps.net. Planet Paranormal, Creative Commons, and freemusicarchives.org. Thanks for the tunes. Midnight Syndicate, you're the best. Hey, from the haunted back roads of America, this has been another G&D exclusive interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't, because
we love you.
Night, guys.